Thank you for tuning in to this IFPRI podcast. Food, forests, and landscapes. Solutions for sustainable development. Held on Monday, June 24th, 2013, in Washington, D.C. Q&A session chaired by Gwendolyn Stansberry of IFPRI.
Thank you, Schengen. I'll ask our speakers to please come to the table. So we'll open the floor up for questions and answers. Also, we have an audience watching via live stream, so there may be some questions coming in virtually as well. What we'll do is take sets of three questions, have the panelists answer them. If you could keep your questions fairly brief, and if you're addressing them to a specific panelist, please do let us know. And for the sake of the virtual audience, if you could identify yourself when you stand up, that would be wonderful. And there'll be microphones circulating through the room. So I open the floor up to Q&A. If anyone has a particular question, just raise your hand.
Hi, I'm Kelly Witkowski with the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture. Thank you for your presentations. Gita, you touched on this a little bit, but for me, one of the biggest challenges when we're talking about a landscape approach is having in place adequate governance structures, encouraging collaboration across ministries and sectors. And I was wondering if you or Peter or Schengen could comment a little bit more on how we might facilitate synergies between the ministries and help ensure that the governance frameworks and structures are in place to enable an integrated approach on the ground.
Hello, I'm Sarah Shear from Eco Agriculture Partners. It's a pleasure to hear all of you here today. I have a question and also just one piece of information. My question, we've been working for about 10 years on integrated landscape approaches at Eco Agriculture, trying to learn, what does it mean and how do you implement it. And one of the things that's come out of it is that it's probably not enough to improve how we do agriculture and improve how we do forestry and improve how we do water. A lot of it's actually about transforming the way that we do each of those things. And I was wondering if you all had some examples or things you found particularly promising about ways that forests can themselves become more important for food production, so we don't have to only depend upon sustainable intensification of crops, although that's obviously critically important. And also how sustainable crop intensification can be transformed so we're not looking only at the reduction of pollution from agriculture, but are looking at how agricultural systems themselves can produce ecosystem services so that we don't have to depend only on forests to produce ecosystem services. So that was my question. But I did also want to take 1 second to do a little advertisement for the Landscapes for People, Food, and Nature initiative, which began in 2011. And we're partnering with groups around the world to try to learn more and support these landscape initiatives. So be interested to hear more about that. Thanks.
Elliot Masters with the World Agroforestry Center, ECRAF. I'd like to build on Sarah's contribution in two ways while we're on the subject of self-promotion. We have a study here which we just produced for FAO back in May on agroforestry, food, and nutritional security. And I would be happy to send a copy of this to anybody who's interested. Just give me your business card. Second, and also building on Sarah's contribution, I hope I'll be lucid because I've just gotten off the plane from Myanmar, and I have some good news to bring back because I went there for a week of capture with this preconception of mine, thinking about integrated, I consider myself a specialist in integrated food production systems with reference to the agricultural landscape. So I went there with this preconception in mind, and I tried to keep it to myself. But on Friday, there was a review organized by USAID of a study by Michigan State University. It was a diagnostic study on the agricultural system of Myanmar. And what came back to me really energized me because it was all about breaking down these silos and producing an integrated approach, which is coming from the stakeholder. I went into that, to be honest, a little bit hesitant because I felt that it was in one of these diagnostics that's put together by a donor, by exterior people, experts, telling locals what to do. But really, this stakeholder workshop lived up to its name. So again, I'd be happy to share information on these activities with anyone. And to lapse very briefly into self-promotion, there's a very useful example, I feel, that we're trying to put in place in Myanmar right now. It's called Ridge to Reef in the Philippines. It's an integrated approach implemented by ECRAF with World Fish and some implication of ERIE as well. So again, anyone interested in these topics, please grab me. And finally, I would just like to thank each of our three contributors to this discussion. I thank you incredibly for advancing this important concept.
Thank you. So we'll answer that first set of three questions and move on. I know there's people who have more questions. So the first one for Gita, but really for any of our panelists, on governance structures. The second one on integrated approaches and ways that forests themselves can become more important, as well as how sustainable intensification can be transformed. And maybe some general comments on how one goes about breaking down silos, I think would be good. So any of our panelists, Gita, would you like to start?
Sure.
Okay. Your question is very, very good, and I'll speak wearing the World Bank hat. Let me be very honest. I think the integrated landscape approach is very new. We too have been big culprits in the way clients and countries have a silo, because they have ministries and we have sectors. So when our forestry team goes, they go to the forestry department. When our ag team goes, they go to the agriculture guys. When the fisheries go, they go to the fish guys. Which is now becoming much more of advocacy as well as our own strategy, we are having much more integrated poverty reduction strategy, which is sustainable. And when you bring in the word sustainable, one then begins to look at the impacts of climate change, agriculture production systems, forestry, etc. And what we've been doing is highlighting more the outcome, poverty reduction, shared prosperity, etc., rather than indicators on forestry or ag production, which are there, but that's not our main conversation. In some of our new programs now, I still don't know whether we'll have a big impact in terms of getting institutions that are much more multi-sectoral in nature and able to address whether it's nutrition or poverty reduction on a more multi-sectoral. But we've been trying, rather than just having a bilateral conversation and exchange of resources with the line ministries, we are doing it more with ministries of finance or economy and planning, and then letting them kind of get all the shareholders, stakeholders around the table, and then creating these institutions. The results are still mixed, but at least we have different ministries conversing and kind of agreeing on a strategy. So let me stop there.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Those are really important points, and I hope we can entrust the World Bank of pushing this to the right levels of governments. But I will comment on perhaps from another point of view. I think we make a mistake if we think that a landscape is something we draw a boundary around and then attempt to manage. Then all we've achieved is to create a new box. And therefore, I would promote the idea that we look at landscape more as an analytical framework. It is not some thing. It is not a geographic entity. It is not a new sector. It is simply an analytical framework that we all need to relate to. And then it's a completely new way of doing business. We invent new ways of doing business in all sorts of fields. Just imagine when the smartphones came. Suddenly we did things completely differently. That kind of shift is what we need. We don't need to change the basic mode of communications, but we need to figure out a smarter way of doing business in the landscape. Along that line, Sarah, for examples, and I would put it in this way, that yes, we could probably come up with a long range of examples, and that would be very educational for the elite in Washington. But that's not the point. The point is to make it possible for the local communities to come up with their solutions, whatever they prioritize and whatever their ambitions are. And we shouldn't try to interfere too much in that. We need to make it possible. That's the main point. And then we need to analyze what implications those choices have and what kind of policies we may need to apply at a higher level. So coming back to my silos and fragmentation statement, I think we need to get out of a situation where we all try to defend our own bureaucracies instead of defending the planet.
Okay, let me add a couple points here. I think for the last several decades, we have learned hard lesson that we were silo, we were pursuing different objectives, but more and more, we realize that we have to work together. We have to look at all these different development objectives together. Now, several issues there, how we can move this forward even more quickly. Well, the governance issue, I would argue for a bottom-up approach. At a community level, even individual level, all these issues are integrated. You know, they are talking about their environment, their food security, their nutrition security, their environment, their income, their employment, and so on. It is when you move upper to the government that you are more divided. So I think bottom-up from the bottom, let's promote this nexus and link up to the higher level. That's one. The second, the research institutions have also changed, including CGIAR. I mean, part of the, we can debate how the CGIAR reform has affected the center's research. But one good thing about the reform is to force the centers to work together to tackle some of the problems using an integrated approach: food security, forestry, water, nutrition, and health. I think research institutions have also changed. Education. I mean, when we had our conference in New Delhi 2 years ago, we realized that we have to start with education, multidisciplinary educational programs to link nutrition, health, agriculture, environment together. Do we have that sort of degrees? Then more importantly, young people. I found this is actually fascinating. I just came back from Norway, your neighbor, that these young people are very excited about the future development issues, environment, water, land, food security, hunger, and they are willing to work together, not only within their own countries, but also at the global landscape because of easy access to internet. So I'm very excited about that. So let's work together to support the young people wherever they are so they can integrate all this together. Then I think the well, Sarah, your question about, okay, the forestry. Yeah, forestry can produce food, nutritious food, but that's not enough. So the intensification is still very, very much needed to protect the existing forestry. And in the meantime, we can produce more with less.
Thank you. So we'll go to the second set. We'll start over here with Ephraim.
Ephraim Konya from IFPRI. Poverty and food and nutrition has always bypassed the kitchen. Both research and development investment have bypassed the kitchen. And by this I mean, if you look at research and development, and they talk about food and they talk about production, marketing, and sometimes consumption. But they are not looking much about the energy that is used by the poor farmers to prepare the food. A very good example is Africa, where 50% of wood fuel is consumed in the world. The governments, they are always keen about preventing tree cutting, but they are not giving the farmers, the people, the option to prepare food. The World Bank and governments also have invested in rural electrification, but electricity is used for lighting and not for cooking. Looking at our research in the CGR, we have never looked at very much at the energy that is used by the poor farmers to prepare the food. Very recently, Malawi has a lady president. She's investing very much into fuel-efficient cook stoves. Maybe because she's a lady, she knows what is going on in the kitchen. In my own country, the old women with red eyes are killed. They are thinking that they are witches. Why? Because of the indoor pollution, because of this fuel inefficient cookstove that they use. So what are we doing? We researchers and development programs to address the fuel efficient and energy issues that are taking place in the rural areas by the poor people.
Any more questions?
Yes, John McDermott from IFPRI. I have a question to both Gita and Peter. Both of you, you both implied and stated that this relationship with people and communities in the landscape is critical. Can you help us to understand how the World Bank and C4 has a relationship with those people and what it looks like?
Any other questions over here, Rajul?
Rajul Pandya Loach at IFPRI. A question for Peter. Peter, you talked briefly about your desire to have forestry interwoven, if I understood you correctly, into the SDGs, into the post-2015 MDGs. And I was curious what was the motivation for that and how you'd go about weaving that into the other communities. What would be your strategy to make them want to do that? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll answer these set of questions. So again, addressing what's going on in the kitchens, actually, the energy use by farmers. John has a very sort of pointed question about the relationship with the World Bank and CIFAR with the actual communities that they serve. And Rajul had a question about interweaving forestry into the SDGs. So maybe, Peter, would you like to take a step?
Thank you for raising the energy question. C4 has actually worked quite a bit on charcoal and wood fuel in its research throughout the year. So I think CDAR is doing something here, but still it needs more attention. I think it's a very important part of food security and also of health. You mentioned indoor air pollution, and that's one of the major health issues in many places. So there's a lot to do there. Today we get 10% of our overall energy mix from biomass, not all from the forest, but from biomass of different kinds. That's five times the combined nuclear power capacity. So I agree, we're ignoring this. And I was very disappointed in the high-level panel's report on SDGs that they downplayed biomass as a source of energy. I don't understand how they could do that. It's so important for so many things, including for the poor and vulnerable. So that this is an area that needs more attention, for sure. And that's also why I emphasize in a landscape approach, not just the food products, but the non-food products of whatever kind, and energy being one of them. Then we can have a long debate on energy generally from natural resources, and there's a debate at the moment whether we should make electricity out of wood, and for some reason this has become a negative thing, and I'm planning to do something in the direction to say that unless we use nature to produce energy, we are in trouble. And we still don't have the fusion energy and all that. Then, how do we relate to people in the landscape? That's a strange question. But I would say we do that a lot. Christine Paddock is here from us. She's our research director for forests and livelihoods. And she can testify that a very large proportion of our research has exactly to do with what happens at the landscape level, at the local stakeholder level. We're doing surveys. Poverty Environment Network was a big study that looked at the proportion of income that comes from forest resources to rural people. And we're planning to do more work in the areas of food security, etc. And also, one very important thing that I mentioned, that the world will look very different only 30, 40 years from now. How will migration impact how we manage our natural resources? We already have a huge population of outgrowers living in the cities, having mixed economies in the families. What does that mean for investments in the land, intensification of agriculture or not, etc.? So there are many, many questions here that apply directly to the people in the landscape, and I think we are quite active in that space. If I missed something, you can talk to Christine after. And then finally, forestry and SDGs. I actually don't argue that forestry should have an SDG. I think there are way too many isolated interests that want to have an indicator in the SDGs, just as there were in the MDGs. And I think it would be a mistake to have indicators that are too sectorial inside the SDGs. However, I am happy that natural resources management has now come in as one proposed SDG, and I can see also that forestry is relevant to at least 9 of the 12 proposed SDGs. So I see much more a reason to think, how could forestry relate to as many of the SDGs as possible, rather than argue that we want to have a box of our own.
Schenken, would you like to comment and then
Peter
first?
Your question was people and the World Bank and where they are. As Peter says, I just want to reiterate the same, that they are at the core of our development agenda. We have a business line that started called Community-Driven Development. And it's a business line that cuts across all sectors, where people or beneficiaries or the poor and the vulnerable, however it's defined in different geographic areas, are the building block of sustainability. And whether it's access to basic services, it's a landscape, a sustainable development approach. The fundamental concept here is to be able to achieve any kind of sustainable development or economic growth, the poor and the vulnerable need to have income and food security, and access, and thereby access to basic services. This business line is not only just in IDA only or the lesser developed countries, but also in the middle income countries, where middle income is not middle class. The largest number of poor are, and I think it was in Schengen's graph, where the very, very drastic nightmares are in middle income countries now. Let me leave it there.
FM, I think question of your remarks on access to energy in the rural African households is a huge, huge issue. I should have had another chart to show you the lack of electricity access at a household level in a global map. Then you will see in Africa, majority of households do not have access to clean energy, do not have access to electricity. And I know this is one of the probably greatest challenges Africans is facing, in addition to infrastructure and human capital, so access to energy. There are many ways to do it. The solar energy in Africa has great potential, but that potential has not tapped. Biomass, biogas is another great potential that has also not been tapped. Probably more importantly, it is the access to electricity. As you know, very small percentage of rural African households have access to electricity. Without electricity, it's very difficult to improve your education, very difficult to introduce rural industrialization, very difficult to improve even rural roads. So electricity is a key there. So I really hope that Africa will take that issue seriously. In fact, the Tanzania South Corridor Development Authority recognized access to electricity as one of the top priorities in addition to our rural infrastructure. I really hope that they will treat that issue seriously. I always argued that any development goals, SDGs, MDGs, have to be people-focused. People, it is people. It's sustainable people. It's healthy people who have to be the center of any development goals.
Thank you, Schenken. Are there any more questions from the floor? Okay, if not, I might ask the speakers if they each have a last few words that they feel on something they hadn't adequately covered or a question that they might want to address. If not, we can adjourn early. Peter, any last remarks?
No, I got to say a lot of things, so I'm quite happy about that. But I think the main thing to underscore again is that we're moving in a new direction. We are moving towards more collaboration, less conflicts between the different interests in the different sectors. And the way we approach the landscape thinking is really at that level. It's about the entire management of natural resources. It isn't a separate approach on dealing with certain aspects of our future. It's really to look at the whole thing together. And I'm really happy that we are increasingly working together a lot within the CDR. We heard from ECRAF here. We have IFPRI, of course. We are from CIFRA very active in the climate change work as well, and increasingly with others. And we're also expanding our external partnerships, and I think this is really the way forward. Thank you.
First, it was a great pleasure to be here. This agenda could not be more timely, more important. And it's as both Peter and Shangan referred, that this is a partnership and requires all of us at the table. And already, I think many of the silos internally, let me speak for my institution, I have broken down. At least people are conversing around the same table. People are still, the beneficiaries are still very much a building block in this, and sustainability is no longer just a jargon. And we hope to continue this conversation with you.
We know that many people are still suffering from hunger, malnutrition. We know that our planet, the natural resources in our planet is very limited, is depleting very fast. We cannot afford working silos. We got to work together. And I would suggest that let's start with ourselves. Let's reach out to work with others, not wait others to approach you. So let's start with ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, I would like to offer just very last remarks on the collaboration between IFPRI and CIFRA. It was a wonderful opportunity. We hope to repeat that again in the future. And thanks all of you for attending today's seminar and for lending me pens and whatnot while I was up here. So thank you very much.